Well, we'll speak with City Council Member Kendra Brooks, the sponsor of new ICE Out legislation in the city, that ICE agents can't wear masks, they can't go around in unmarked cars, that they will only accept judge-signed warrants, and more. Stay with us.
In 1649, to St. George's Hill, a ragged band they called the Diggers came to show the people's will. They defied the landlords, they defied the laws. They were the dispossessed, claiming what was theirs. We come in peace, they said, to sing and sow. We come to work the land in common and to make the waste ground grow. This earth divided, we will make whole. So it shall be a common treasury for all. The sin of property we do disdain. No man has any right to buy and sell the earth for private gain. By theft and murder they took the land. Now everywhere the walls rise up at their command.
The World Turned Upside Down song, performed in our Democracy Now! Studios by Billy Bragg. And speaking of Democracy Now!, we celebrate our 30th anniversary at Riverside Church on February 23rd. Juan's going to be flying in from Chicago. Whit Marsalis is going to be going down the aisle with his trumpet. We'll be joined by Michael Stipe, the great singer and musician and activist. Hooray for the riffraff, Angela Davis, and more. You can get tickets as they're going quickly at our website, democracynow.org. That's February 23rd at the historic Riverside Church here in New York. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. As we continue to look at local resistance nationwide against Trump's crackdown, we go to Philadelphia, where a group of at least 15 city council members have backed a package of 7 bills aimed at combating federal immigration enforcement operations in Philadelphia, including codifying the city's sanctuary protections. The bill would also prohibit federal immigration agents from concealing their identities, covering their faces, or using unmarked cars. It also requires judge-signed warrants and prohibits city workers from cooperating with ICE. The efforts are being led by Philadelphia City Council members Kendra Brooks, who will join us in a minute, and Rue Landau. They co-authored the legislation package. All but 2 of the city's 17 council members have co-sponsored the ICE Out package, indicating the legislation may have a veto-proof majority. In response to the legislation being introduced, Philadelphia Mayor Cheryl Parker made one of her first public statements about Trump's immigration raid, saying on social media, quote, "We're aware of the potential challenges we face. We understand the public's fear of the unknown as it relates to federal policy associated with immigration," unquote. Meanwhile, Philadelphia District Attorney Larry Krasner has launched a national coalition of prosecutors that would hold federal immigration agents accountable if they're found to have violated state or local laws and civil rights protections. The coalition includes prosecutors in Virginia, Arizona, and Texas. Last week, D.A. Krasner issued this warning to federal immigration agents.
This is a small bunch of wannabe Nazis, that's what they are. In a country of 350 million, we outnumber them. I, along with a bunch of other state prosecutors, are rallying around Mary Moriarty, who is the prosecutor in Minneapolis. I know for a fact she is working 24/7 to make sure that there is justice coming out of two, what appear to be, by all indications, criminal homicides, and what appears to be, by all indications, a criminal shooting of someone in the leg. I want you to understand that just as you have come together, there are state prosecutors coming together right now to make sure that people understand there will be accountability. There will be accountability now. There will be accountability in the future. There will be accountability after Trump is out of office. If we have to hunt you down the way they hunted down Nazis for decades, we will find your identities, we will find you, we will achieve justice, and we will do so under the Constitution and the laws of the United States.
That was Philadelphia DA Larry Krasner. For more, we're joined in Philadelphia by City Council member Kendra Brooks, sponsor of the Ice Out legislative package that's being voted on by the Philadelphia City Council. Powerful words by the DA. Can you explain exactly what's at the heart of your legislation and how it can be enforced if, in fact, you and Rue Landau, the two of you sponsoring this legislation, get it passed?
Well, thank you so much for having me to start. Councilmember Landau and I worked very closely with DA Larry Krasner and our Sheriff's Department to make sure this legislation will be able to be enforced once we move it forward. Part of it was just making sure our community members felt safe. As a community organizer myself, we heard the cries from the community calling for something to be done. So we started out with a series of community trainings around how to protect yourself against ICE. And over the last couple of months, we've been crafting out this legislation with both local and national legislators and attorneys to make sure that this is something that we can actually implement here in the city of Philadelphia.
And Councilwoman, how would these this package actually work? Are you seeking to get criminal liability or civil liability by Philadelphians against the ICE abuses?
I think the determination on exactly how it worked would be up to the prosecutor, which will be the DA's office, to determine exactly how that works. But for us, the goal was to get something on the books to codify our existing executive orders to make sure the community members felt safe and that something was actually being done to protect, you know, our citizens here in Philadelphia, whether it's the number of folks who have experienced ICE agents being unmasked and in unmarked cars coming to the criminal justice center or to schools or to places of employment, or whether it was making sure that we're not participating and sharing data with ICE agents, and also making sure that they're unable to stage raids and attacks on our community and our public spaces, i.e. schools, recreation centers, or any places owned by the city. So our goal was to make sure that something is in place to prevent any undue harm and to work with existing law enforcement to make sure that we can do something to protect our citizens.
And what about conditions in detention centers in Philadelphia? There was a death of a Cambodian-American, Paradai La, on January 9th. He was found unresponsive in the Philadelphia detention center and rushed to a hospital. What can the Philly city government do to regulate conditions inside a federal jail?
From my understanding, we have been looking into that. We heard it was two deaths in detention centers here in Pennsylvania, but they aren't actually in Philadelphia. We are working with legislators across the Commonwealth to have this discussion, and we have a couple bills that are happening in our state house as well around regulations around ICE and detention centers. But we'll see what happens moving forward. We've been working very closely with a lot of our immigrant justice organizations in the city and across the Commonwealth, and hopefully we'll see something come out of that soon.
The Pennsylvania governor, Josh Shapiro, has sued the Trump administration 19 times and successfully stopped the unlawful deployment of the National Guard. As we begin to wrap up, can you talk about the significance of this support from the state government and also perhaps what you want to see more of and the timing of your ICE Out legislation, when it's going to be voted on?
I think it's good to see the state of Pennsylvania fighting back against the Trump administration, especially when it comes to our citizens, whether it the multiple cases that the governor has brought against, whether it's the removing of our slave monument down on Market Street, or us implementing this ICE legislation. I think collectively, as a Commonwealth, we can work together to protect our citizens across the board. And also with our ICE Out legislation, we are waiting for it to get put into committee. It should take about 4 to 6, maybe 8 weeks before we can get a committee hearing, or maybe sooner. And our goal is just to move this as fast as possible to make sure that, you know, we're doing all that we can to keep Philadelphians safe and continue to work with our state and federal legislatures to make sure that Pennsylvania is a welcoming place for our immigrant neighbors.
Well, I want to thank you very much for being with us. Philadelphia City Councilmember Kendra Brooks, the minority leader and member of the Working Families Party. As we continue our tour around the country of what cities and states are doing, this is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. In the state of Maine, the Portland City Council passed a resolution Monday night to allow Portland's mayor to participate in lawsuits against ICE. The vote came after federal agents conducted immigration raids in Portland and in Lewiston as part of what the Trump administration has called Operation Catch of the Day. They are playing on the fact that Maine is well known for its seafood. As they talk about catching people, Operation Catch of the Day. Lewiston and Portland have sizable Somali populations, just like Minneapolis. The resolution passed by the Portland City Council noted that attendance at some schools has decreased by 20% and that many workers are afraid to leave their homes. Maine state lawmakers are also considering legislation aimed to keep ICE out of schools, healthcare facilities, public libraries. Lewiston Mayor Carl Schilling testified last week.
As the mayor of Lewiston, I'm advocating strongly for LD 2106. This bill protects the people of Maine as they visit and use our community institutions and also safeguards their personal information from our tyrannical and authoritarian federal government. I wish that things were different, but they are not. Mass government agents are here snatching our residents and sowing fear and terror. This bill allows our neighbors to safely visit their doctor, check out a book, and go to second grade. Passage of this bill also sends a strong message that this legislature stands in complete resistance to the federal government's slide into fascism. I appreciate Representative Sato for sponsoring this bill and the committee's time. Thank you.
We're joined now by Mufalo Cheatham, the executive director of the Maine Immigrants' Rights Coalition, based in Portland, Maine. The group represents over 100 member organizations. Operation Catch of the Day? Mufalo Cheatham, it's horrifying to even say that. But can you talk about what has happened in the last weeks? Have you experienced an ICE surge in Maine? I'm not talking about the weather. And talk about who's been arrested, who's been taken, and how you're organizing with the Maine Immigrant Rights Coalition.
Yeah, no, thank you so much. I mean, it's hard to think about the, you know, catch of a day. But again, you know, we're a state where, like you said, you know, we're a lobster state. But yeah, it's been a whirlwind. I mean, since January 20th, when I got the first verification at 7:45, and you know, 4 or 5 days later, it was just sheer panic. I mean, it was unbelievable. It was unbelievable. I think you know, you kind of watch these things on TV, and then when you see them down the streets, you know, it just sends a very wave of, you know, fear. And, you know, it was just panic. It was just panic. So, but our organization has been really planning for this. We didn't think we were going to be, you know, this soon. We thought they would come, but not this soon. But our organizing, our hotline, you know, we have had over 5,000 plus, you know, increase in phone calls, you know, for the next 5 days after January 20th. It was just boots on the ground. It was just boots on the ground. But we've been organizing, as we started seeing the people who are being picked up, this became like, it just became real, you know, it just became real because it was your neighbor, you know, it was also, you know, just somebody that you go to church with. And when we heard that they were coming for the worst of the worst, you know, that was really painful to see because it was just ordinary people that we know. You know, one of our community leaders was picked up on the first day and should, you know, basically, you know, you look at what she's being, you know, claimed to have done. It's just a mother, you know, just a poor mother, you know, just trying to make a life here in the United States. But yeah, it's been really, really challenging. But we've been organizing, as you heard from the mayor, you know, from Lewiston, you know, LD, you know, 2106, you know, is one of the legislation that we are, you know, advocating that it passes to keep our communities safe, to keep our communities safe. And now, you know, since last week, you know, it's been very hard to tell people that they are safe, that they can go back to work, because we don't know who they are targeting. We don't know who they are targeting. When we saw, you know, the number of people who were being arrested, there was no pattern. There was no pattern. So it gets very hard to tell somebody, you know, that they are safe. And so people have been sheltering in place, and the community really did a great job, you know, organizing themselves, getting information, you know, getting to know your rights, you know, also curbing rumors. So, you know, it's been great to see, you know, our community sheltering in place and getting informed. But it's been also amazing to see the larger community come to our aid. You know, people buying groceries for folks, picking up their prescriptions, picking up their kids. You know, it's just been a community support, and we're very, very grateful that as a small state, you know, community means a lot. You know, most people, including myself, we moved to the state of Maine because of that sense of security. You could let your child walk down the street. If your child could walk to school, you could let them. But now it's very, very challenging for parents to let their children walk down the street. So that sense of stability, you know, has gone. And, you know, that's what becomes very hard. You know, when you destabilize a community, you know, it's very, very difficult to have them back, to have that back, you know, for people to still feel that sense of security. So you're always looking over your shoulder. You're always, you know, suspecting who is that one in that car. You know, when you hear a knock on your door, you don't know when or if to even open. So it's, you know, it's very, very challenging right now for people to really feel safe, to really feel that, you know, they are a target or they're not a target. So we've been organizing, and we'll continue advocating, you know, for the immigrant rights here in our state. And for us, you know, it's really ICE out of Maine.
I wanted to ask you, most Americans are not aware that there's a significant immigrant community in Maine, especially of Somalis. Could you talk about the evolution of that community, how it developed and how it grew?
Yeah, I think it's been over, you know, right now, I would say, I think over like 10, 15 years, you know, when we saw, you know, the increased number of, you know, people of Somali descent come to the state of Maine. And so Lewiston, one of our board chair, our board chair lives in Lewiston, and she tells this story of when she moved to Lewiston from Atlanta, there were only like three immigrants and they were Somalis. And fast forward, you know, people move to a community because of somebody that looks like them or somebody that speaks their language and knows their culture. And so as people started moving to Lewiston, you know, that community started growing, not because of anything, but because there were people who could help them integrate. People could help them, you know, learn the language, you know, help them, you know, get a job. And so over the years, you know, that community has grown. We have a lot of, you know, nonprofits. Some of our organizations, you know, are based in Lewiston. We saw businesses thrive. We saw nonprofits thrive. You know, we saw schools, you know, getting, you know, more diverse. And so over the years, you know, Lewiston has become one of the states that, you know, most of our immigrants. From 2019, we also saw an increased number of people who came in seeking asylum, you know, from different countries other than, you know, Somali. So we have people from Angola and from Congo who live in Lewiston. So it's not just, you know, people from Somali who live in Lewiston. And so it is a growing state, and we're proud of what our immigrants are doing in this, in, in the city of Lewiston.
We want to thank you so much, Mufalo Cheatham, for joining us. Of course, we'll continue to follow what's happening. Mufalo Cheatham is executive director of the Maine Immigrants Rights Coalition based in Portland, Maine. It seems President Trump has targeted Maine both for the Somali community of Lewiston and Portland, and also as he takes on the female governor of Maine, Janet Mills. We'll continue to cover these stories. Coming up, we'll talk with a ProPublica reporter who revealed the identities of the two Border Patrol agents who killed Alex Preti in Minneapolis. Stay with us.
Chain us well. The clergy dazzle us with heaven, or they damn us into hell. We will not worship the God they serve. The god of greed who feeds the rich while poor folks starve. We work, we eat together, we need no swords. We will not bow to the masters or pay rent to the lords. Still we are free, though we are poor. Ah, you diggers all, stand up for glory, stand up now. From the men of property, the orders came. They sent the hired men and troopers to wipe out the diggers' claim, tear down their cottages, destroy their corn. They were dispersed, but still the vision lingers on.
The World Turned Upside Down song performed in our Democracy Now! Studios by Billy Bragg. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. In Minnesota, the Hennepin County Medical Examiner has ruled the death of the 37-year-old VA ICU nurse Alex Preti a homicide due to multiple gunshot wounds. He was fatally shot by two Border Patrol agents January 24th. His killing comes just weeks after ICE agents fatally shot Renee Good, another 37-year-old. She was a 37-year-old mother of three in Minneapolis. On Friday, the Justice Department has announced it's conducting a civil rights investigation into Preti's death. However, the administration has refused to identify the agents involved. But over the weekend, ProPublica identified the men as Border Patrol agent Jesus Jesse Ochoa and Customs and Border Protection Officer Raimundo Gutierrez, both from Texas. ProPublica reporter David McSwain joins us now from Washington, D.C. David, thanks so much for being with us. Can you start off by talking about the decision of ProPublica to name the names? Now, of course, we do know the name of the agent who shot Renee Good, but we haven't known these names, the two CBP agents.
Right. Well, this is a matter of intense public interest. We've all seen the videos. You know, more than a week had passed, and in the interim, we were asking questions of, you know, who are these officers involved in this shooting that, you know, from various angles, I think we all have questions about who shot and how it escalated so quickly. And, you know, we came to the decision when we were able to identify these officers that this is in the public interest. This country has a tradition and norm of being able to identify law enforcement officers, both for their safety and the safety of the public. And, you know, the shielding of agents, both in terms of the administration secrecy around them and their ability to wear masks as, you know, we see these violent encounters in the streets, the first line of accountability would be enable, you know, for families to, you know, find any sort of accountability would be to identify who those officers are. And, you know, for potential prosecutors and so forth, same thing. And we found out from state leaders in Minnesota that, you know, there was an intense frustration around just being able to figure out what happened and who was involved.
And David, what were you able to learn about Ochoa and Gutierrez? When did they join the federal agency? And have there been any other incidents in their past of excessive use of force or allegations, at least?
It's pretty hard to pin down details on agents. They are instructed to really scrub themselves from the internet. But we do know that both men hail from South Texas. Jesus Ochoa, age 43, joined in 2018. I'm told by his ex-wife in an interview that he had really aspired to be an agent for quite some time. And in that region, this is a pretty good job. A lot of folks, very well-meaning. It's got great benefits. That's not uncommon. That didn't surprise me. In terms of Raimundo Gutierrez, he is age 35. He joined a little bit earlier, 2014. So we know that they're not part of this most recent recruiting push with all of the money being funneled into Homeland Security. They have had some experience, though certainly, you know, CBP's, you know, mission, you know, before recent months was not to go into American cities and conduct these sort of sweeps.
And at a White House press briefing last month, Vice President J.D. Vance suggested ICE agents have absolute immunity. I'm wondering your response to this allegation by the vice president.
Well, I don't know about absolute immunity. You know, there is a concept called qualified immunity. And I wrote a story back in April towards the beginning of the Trump administration. One of the first things the administration did was wipe out the levers of accountability within Homeland Security, including the Civil Rights and Civil Liberties Office, which really would follow up on these claims and, you know, on allegations of wrongdoing internally, certainly would have looked at something like this and something like Preddy's death and referred that to DOJ for potential criminal investigation. And, you know, that headline was a quote from one of the former lawyers in that office who had said, you know, they don't care about civil rights. And that story essentially portended that in that environment, it's really going to come down to whether or not a federal prosecutor is willing to prosecute a federal agent because they do have qualified immunity. If they're doing, you know, if these allegations transpire in the course of them following orders under the executive branch, doing their jobs, there's an argument that, you know, they have immunity and it's going to be a federal matter. So it is a really tricky area in terms of seeking accountability.
I was just struck in your piece, David, a longtime resident of Rio Grande Valley. Jesse Ochoa had for years dreamed of working for the Border Patrol. According to his ex-wife, they split in 2021. He'd become a gun enthusiast with about 25 rifles, pistols and shotguns, Angelica Ochoa said. And I was wondering if you can comment on that. And also, the previous piece you co-wrote, headlined, Unfettered and Unaccountable, How Trump is Building a Violent, Shadowy Federal Police Force.
Sure. I don't know what else I could really add to his ex-wife's statements. They did have an acrimonious divorce. She did say to me that his demeanor really changed when he did become a Border Patrol agent, and they drifted apart for reasons, unknown. In terms of the most recent article you mentioned, I did do, you know, I worked on a story really looking at, beginning in L.A. and certainly in Chicago and now Minneapolis, we see a rampant use of these, you know, so-called less lethals, pepper balls and rubber bullets and pepper spray and that sort of thing. And their use has really been blatantly, you know, flagrantly in violation of the agency's own rules and policing norms. For instance, firing at people's heads and crotches, throwing tear gas into cars where there are children, using these launchers in ways that, you know, are, you know, they're meant to deploy a weapon into a crowd, but they're hitting people and causing serious injury. And, you know, that story actually it is relevant in what we saw with Alex Preddy's death. That scene really escalates when a Border Patrol officer fires pepper spray at his face, causing disorientation, and, you know, several officers pile on. It'd be hard to imagine anyone in that scene really had their bearings of what's going on as those noxious chemicals are floating around.
J. David McSwain, want to thank you for being with us, investigative reporter at ProPublica. We will link to your new piece, The Two CBP Agents Identified in Alex Preddy's Shooting, and your previous pieces, including Trump's immigration forces deploy so-called less lethal weapons in dangerous ways, skirting rules and maiming protesters. To come to our February 23rd, 30th anniversary event, go to democracynow.org.
Thank you for listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Burnaby Mountain.
With Canada's health system under strain, going digital can help heal our healthcare. From virtual visits for everyday concerns to faster, more accurate diagnostics powered by AI, Technology is transforming care. Digital Health Canada supports the people and innovations behind this change. Learn more at digitalhealthcanada.com and subscribe to our podcast.